Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. Today's podcast, which I think we're going to be able to drop before the Final Four or the national championship game begins, is emanating live from New Orleans, Louisiana. Actually, I'm in the Superdome, and we're a couple hours, several hours before tip-off. So there's a bunch of different things that I want to get to. When you're in New Orleans, when you're at the Final Four, you get to catch up with old friends and some old enemies, right? You're like, you're talking to everybody in basketball. And frankly, there's people from other sports here as well. I had a smoothie with LaTroy Hawkins. Remember LaTroy Hawkins? Yeah, he was nasty. It's nasty. Anyway, there's some things that jump out to me which should be said. And the great thing and the response I've gotten from all you about the podcast has been, one, the guests are great. And we have an awesome guest for you today. And I will point out that our guest today, We kind of ran out of time to get into Kansas, really, because they did lose to Kansas. I mean, sorry about that one. That's probably my bad, I think, actually, right? I should have gotten into Kansas with him. That's okay. He told us he'd join us, and we'll break down. He can break down the game and tell you what's what. Our guest today is Chris Caputo. Chris was most recently the assistant head coach at the University of Miami. They, of course, lost in the Elite Eight to Kansas. We'll talk a little bit about that Kansas game, but mostly about his rise from a Division III player whose dad had probably the most unique job. Anybody in the A-10s? I don't know. It really, the guy's unique. He's really interesting. He's from Queens. Then he went to Mass. Then he went to George Mason. And then he went to Miami. And now he's at George Washington. It really has been kind of seamless, and he'll join me upcoming. We'll talk about his journey to becoming named head coach of George Washington University late last week, and today is officially his first day on the job. Meanwhile, in Gotham, yeah, let's discuss all other things basketball wise. I'm still kind of like on a high from that Carolina Duke game. I will caution people over this. It's the greatest college basketball game I've ever seen. Like, you don't have to go back that far in terms of people being in attendance to see unbelievable Final Fours with unbelievable endings, right? Like Virginia with a foul call in the corner on Auburn in the national semifinal, and then Texas Tech and Virginia in the national championship game going to overtime. All that was just, I guess, three seasons ago. But that was the last Final Four that people attended in full attendance in Minneapolis. That was before COVID. That was an unbelievable Final Four. Of course, Chris Jenkins hit what I think is the biggest shot in the history of American sports. As the buzzer expires to win a championship was remarkable, incredible. So, I mean, I could go through all of the great games, recent and not so recent. This one was a great one. This one also was very meaningful because it's Carolina Duke in the tournament for the first time. Carolina Duke in the Final Four. Mike Krzyzewski's last game going against a guy who frankly played against Coach K and played in the Final Four in Hubert Davis. So I think all those, and then, of course, to a slightly lesser extent, having Kansas and Villanova, Blue Bloods, New Bloods, whatever, in the Final Four, it makes it for a great storyline, a great game, and something worthy of discussion. However, I think it was a great game. I don't know if it was the greatest game ever. It didn't come down to a last second. The last 30 seconds were kind of, it's over. But let's give credit to North Carolina, who found a way to win a game in which look, they were down, one with a minute and 19 to go. And that's when Coach K called a timeout and tried to set his defense, put Mark Williams in the game. And, of course, that's when North Carolina hit a couple more shots and ended up winning a national playing for a national championship. I thought that the adjustment of Hubert not really playing his bench was big. Obviously, they play a completely different style than the one that they previously played. So that's got to be a good portion of the reason why it took so long for this team to hit. They're a little loose with the basketball, but it kind of works because he gives them freedom and they have a ton of self-confidence. And I thought they got after it defensively. I thought Brady Manick managed himself and didn't get into foul trouble early in the game, knowing Paolo Banchero was going to come after him. You know, Duke and the foul trouble side, part of that is you have to adjust to the officiating. You know, the first game, there were hardly any calls. I didn't like the second call on Dave McCormick, and I thought that one put Villanova back in the game because he had one foul and he let his player go and lay the ball in basket. I think it was Dixon. And that shouldn't have been a foul. But if you watch that game fairly tightly officiated early, the same could be said for Carolina. And I think it was even more tightly officiated in the Carolina Duke game because they knew they wanted to let it get up and down and running, but you can't do it until you loosen up the hand-to-hand combat. And the only way to do that is to tightly officiate the game early. So that's what I feel like happened with Duke getting into foul trouble. Do I love that half the Duke players walked off without shaking hands? No. Do I think it's the end all be all? No. Do I think there's some confusion there and you lose a game and it's your last game and you're sad. You just want to get out of the place. Like, I totally get. What I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do the Mike Krzyzewski bashing. Like, it really is on some level beneath so many people in our industry. No coach is perfect. Not as every decision he made was right. And I genuinely believe that his presence was the biggest reason for the hype, more so even than the fact that there are rivals separated by 8 miles, you know, playing against each other. So, you know, I thought they went to Banchero a lot, probably could have gone a little bit more. I also thought that there was some room there for some full court pressure that they didn't use. And I thought that Kansas in their win, it wasn't just about making shots. It was also about the fact that you knew how Villanova was going to play, and they used that against Villanova to get open weak side jump shots in the weak side corner, and that execution was brilliant. Kansas played, you know, in the conversation, parts of their best game all season long, and, you know, conversely, Villanova just not the same without Justin Moore. Meanwhile, you got North Carolina and Duke, and North Carolina played good, but great in the second half. The shot making by Love and Manick was ridiculous. I thought Baycott's rebounding was outstanding. And they just did a great job of just being there and making Duke make shots over the top, and Duke could not make enough of them. All right, I'll give you my national championship preview upcoming. But first, let's get the new head coach of George Washington. Here's Chris Caputo.
you're sitting there, and this is your first official day as a Division One head men's basketball coach. What's sleeping been like?
You go to sleep just like because you pass out, not because you have any scheduled sleep plans, you know. And you wake up kind of with your mind racing, so you just get up. Yeah, it's certainly not, you know, we're not on the 8-hour, you know, health and wellness sleep schedule. That's for sure.
When did this become the dream? When did this become like the goal? Like, do you remember the time when you said to yourself, like, man, I'm gonna be a head basketball coach?
Yeah. I got a good story for that. You know, for me, the Final Four was in New York, 96.
Yeah.
And I'm a like JV player at that time at Archbishop Molloy High School in New York, which is, you know, I think you know this. I don't know if the listeners, you know, famous sort of high school program in New York City. Jack Curran was my high school coach, legendary coach in New York. He was the winningest coach in the state. And, you know, some of the names, Kenny Anderson, Kenny Smith, Russ Smith, you know, Brian Winters is a great player there. Kevin Joyce is the captain of the Olympic team. Cole Anthony was there most recently. Coach Larrañaga played there. A lot of guys.
We got it. Right? It's a great program. Listen, Chris,
a lot of guys.
Here's what you'll find. Okay. Like this pod specifically. I mean, you do need to explain some things and give context for some right. things, but some you don't.
Right. Some guys.
So you're a sophomore.
Yeah, sophomore. So a friend of mine who's now a Division III head coach says, hey, the Final Four, I know nothing about like what the Final Four is.
I need a name.
You need a name. All right. Guy Rancourt, he's the head coach of Western Connecticut State. You may know him, but
I actually know so him.
Yeah. So we grew up together, same block. And he says, hey, you know, the Final Four is in New York. Obviously, hey, you want to go down to the Hilton, like on 6th Avenue. And I have no idea what that means at this point, right? At 16 years old and, yeah, sure. You know, so I thought I maybe wanted to coach, knew I probably wasn't good enough to be a, you know, pro player or anything like that. But I go down there with Guy and we kind of walk around the hotel lobby and I'm like, you know, wow. Like I see Coach K walking through the lobby. I see Tark, you know, holding court, you know, at the lobby bar, a bunch of, you know, people in coaching and, you know, with their t-shirts on and, you know, polo shirts on and all that.
Polos with the logos, man.
Polos with the logos, right.
You know, probably, yeah, I don't know, I'm trying to think, 96, probably some pleated khakis and polos with the logos.
Jumpsuits.
Definitely.
Jumpsuits. Yeah. I remember seeing Norm Roberts there, which is ironic, but Norm had coached at our high school as well as an assistant coach. He was at Oral Roberts, I believe, that, you know, at that time, maybe just getting ready to go to Tulsa. So that was cool to see him, somebody who had been, you know, associated with our program. And anyway, I walked out and I said, man, this is like really cool. Like, I want to do this someday. I want to walk around with a polo and a logo on my shirt, you know. And it got me thinking about coaching as a career. And then ironically, 10 years later, I'm coaching in the Final Four at the ripe age of 25, whatever. So 26, I guess it was 25. But, you know, that's kind of been a seminal moment for me, like to think about walking around that lobby at 16. No, it was just sort of like, you know, all the stuff that, you know, young guys do now walking around that lobby. I was kind of doing that at 16, almost as an innocent bystander, as a civilian.
Yeah.
and then, you know, I look back on, you know, anytime you get a tough day, you look back and say, man, how about that? Like, you know, I go from that lobby in 96 to coaching in it in 2006. I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah. I mean, you've never been in that lobby needing a job. That's the only time
that's another reason why you're lucky.
No, but it's funny because the lobby is really, so my dad, my late father was like all lobby team, right? Like he was,
yes.
he loved that. But I, It's funny because that it has a, it can have a mixed effect on you. When I was a kid, sure. Go to the Final Four and you'd see that. You'd be like, man, this is the coolest thing ever. Look at these guys. You're like gods. And they walk by and know your dad and they talk to you. And then you get older and being in broadcasting, it can scare the bejesus out of you, you know, where you sit there and go like, cause I'm trying to think where I think it might've been Houston. I think it might've been Houston where I remember I interviewed for a job and I was, you know, broadcasting at CBS at the time and I'm texting the friend and they're like, do you want this? And I was like, yeah. They're like, you really want to get into coaching? I was like, yeah. And then you walk out, you walk in the lobby and you see there's 1,000 dudes that are not the head coaches that need a job and that have a resume in hand. And they're just trying to bump into somebody who's got a spot open. Hey, I got a player for you, coach.
And you're like, man. I haven't heard that one.
I know. How many calls, texts in the last 24 hours, I got a player for you, coach?
Yeah, many, 50, 100, you know, like okay. More.
Yeah. So it's a real thing. Okay. So you're in high school, Archbishop Mouin. Parents do what?
Yeah. My dad, unique. My mom's a nurse. That's, you know, not unique. She was a nurse. My dad is a 50-year jazz musician in New York City, believe it or not.
Jazz flute? What?
No. Oh, well, he does play jazz flute, but no, like all the sax, clarinet, flute, all the woodwinds. So he, you know, super unique career, kind of like coaching, unique career.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Right. So you have a passion for basketball.
Yeah.
He's a jazz musician. Did he get it?
You know, I think they didn't necessarily get basketball, like they weren't necessarily fans or anything like that. But I think that they got the idea that, like, hey, you should just do what you want to do. You know, if this is what you want to do, you can go chase that. And, you know, we're not going to be judgmental of, you know, maybe what would appear to be a flaky career.
but it was like in high school, did you tell them this is what you want to do?
Yeah. I mean, I thought, you know, I was like a finance major, but I wasn't like a great student, didn't really have too much passion for it. I did a couple of internships, you know, like, in the world of business in New York City. And as I was doing them, I quickly understood, like, yeah, this is not for me. Like, I would much prefer to, you know, be around basketball, go to AAU tournaments, you know, work camps, stuff that Division III players do, you know, like just, try to be around the game. And so, you know, for me, it was trending that way pretty hard, you know, as throughout college, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do.
You know, you're at Westfield State, right?
Westfield State, Massachusetts. Yeah.
Who's the coach?
Rich Sutter, who's still the coach now. He's a great coach. I was like in his first class there. He was an assistant at Colgate, with Donald Foyle. And, you know, he's actually done a really good job there, and kind of they've had some consistency now to be in one of the better teams in the MASCAC, which is like the Massachusetts State League. You know, Tom Thibodeau is at Salem State, Paul Biancardi, Salem State, Tommy Moore from UConn was at Worcester sure. State. So Worcester. A lot of guys. Yeah, exactly. Worcester. Yeah. So it was a fun league to play in. Yeah.
So Jack Kroon, what was special about him as a coach? What can you take from your high school coach, a legendary coach, and say, like,
yeah,
this is what made him special?
Yeah, I think, you know, like, obviously he's a great coach. He had great players and everything, but the idea that he built a, you know, for lack of a better cliche, family, community, brotherhood, whatever you want to call it, you know, that was so present at our school. You know, guys, obviously when I got there, he'd been doing it a long time. So you had guys that played for him in the 60s and the 70s that were back all the time and coming to the office and seeking counsel. And he was picking up the phone constantly and doing things for the guys to try to help them. And, you know, that for me is what I thought coaching was. Like, I didn't think. It's probably why I stayed with Coach Larrañaga for 20 years and we've only had two places. I've told people, you know, that's what I envisioned coaching to be. I didn't understand the business side of it, that, you know, hey, it's not always like this. You don't get to stay at the same place for 50 years. You kind of have all the guys around all the time. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of that and see that. And I strive to sort of maybe find that somewhere. And then, you know, you get in, you realize, well, that's not exactly how it works in college coaching.
when you're at Westfield, what do you remember was it about in terms of practices and games? You know, like you mentioned guys, what can you take away from your experience there?
I think the guy, yeah, I mean, first, you know, I had a great experience. We were Division III players, but I thought we worked really hard. You know, we were serious about our game and our team. Now looking back 20 years of being Division I, it's very funny. You know, you get, especially in that league, because obviously Massachusetts is not a huge state, you know, geographically. So we would like get on the bus, the women are on the bus, the women's team's going to play, we're going to play. We drive to Salem State, drop the women off. We get $5. We go, you know, get pizza. We get back. The women are playing. We're watching like the first half. It's halftime. We go in, we get ready, we play. Everybody gets back on the bus afterwards, drives back. It's all in the same day. I mean, it's, you know, having been on a million charter flights now, and done all the things that, you know, you do when you're at the ACC for 11 years. And it reminds me not to complain about anything, because it's certainly, everyone in Division III is sort of doing it for the love of the game, for real, you know?
What was your best season? Was what year?
You know, my junior year, we had turned the program around. I think we got to like fifth. We were bad when I got there. we had turned the program around 15-11, I think, June, and now we're like, we have a first team all league player and the rookie of the year coming back and a really good core. And then both
who's
of those
that?
Guys got
hurt. Who is your stud?
Bryant James is a guy. He was an unbelievable athlete, undersized, typical Division III. He was like 6'3", but like a power forward that was world-class athlete. But both of those guys get hurt my senior year. So then we go back into the tank. But I'm proud to say that I left it better than I found it because like they've kind of been really good since I left. So
coolest gym in the Mascot.
Coolest gym. You know, it's funny. Kind of like ours is a bandbox when I played in it. It was like a legit high school gym. Now every gym in the league has really, you know, it was kind of like in that late 90s, early 2000s, everybody kind of did a rec center that became the D3 sort of arena. But at that time, I think ours was probably, it was a bandbox, like hot, you know, it could be snow all over the place outside, but it was like 95 degrees. It felt like inside. And I mean, it was certainly in recruiting, it's not something you would walk anybody through like, hey, this is where we play.
No, but when they're packed.
Yeah, when they're packed, it's fun. Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah.
Nothing like it. And then you start dunking in warmups because you're like, you're still... okay. So you get done. You graduate. Yeah. What next?
So it's funny. I always tell this story, and remember, we used to have to do homework in like the computer lab, right? Like for the most part, like you had to be in a computer lab. You weren't. Some guys maybe had something in their room, you know, a big, you know, hard drive computer or what have you. But you know, I'm like in the computer lab checking my email. It's not on my phone or anything like that. And I had been in correspondence with Coach Larrañaga again because of our Molloy connection, and I'd see him. I'd go to IAU events and things like that, and he was, you know, really nice to me. And early days of sort of emailing people back and forth, and I get an email from him, and it's like, "Hey, I got a job opening, assistant coach. I need you to apply for it." My first thought is like, "Wow, this is like easy, right? You just go from being like a bad Division III player to being like an assistant coach at a pretty good mid-major program." And had gotten a couple NCAA tournaments in the recent time. So I apply for the job, and he tells me to call him. I call him and says, "Hey, look, I wanted you to apply. You're not getting the job. All right. But I want to maybe bring you down in a volunteer role. And so I wanted you to apply so I could at least talk to you, you know, state rules or whatever, you know." So I'm a little deflated at this point because I got ahead of myself thinking maybe I'm going to get a job, you know. And basically what he says is, "Hey, look, like I can't hire you in the third spot. You have no qualifications, but I like you. I want to give you a shot. I'm going to hire somebody else and maybe bring you down as a volunteer. Would you do it?" I say yes, having no idea like how much anything costs or anything like that. So he hires Eric Conkle, who's now the head coach of Tulsa, who's a great friend of mine, obviously.
Who's going to join me this week, by the way.
You can ask him to tell some of the stories, guys. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so... and you can't find guys that are too, you know, different and yet great friends, in the sense that Eric grew up like in a town of like 200 people in Amherst, Wisconsin, and I'm from Queens, you know. And so he hires Eric Conkle, and who had been a GA, I think, at Tennessee at that time. And myself as a volunteer, I tell my parents, I got like unbelievable opportunity. You can't believe this. Division I, really good program. You know, okay, like, how much does it pay? Like, well, nothing. You're paying for this. Like, and so.
And this is after they've been paying for college too, right?
Of course, right. And you know, we weren't wealthy people or anything, but we were able to trick it somehow and make it work, you know? So I go down, and Eric finds, in fact, he mentioned it to me this week. He had to find the Fairfax, Virginia is a very, very wealthy, you know, it's a little bit like Orange County, you know, like it's a nice place, a lot of wealth. He found the worst apartment complex humanly possible because we knew we were, you know, making no money. He found the worst apartment complex possible. It was like definitely, you know, 50s, 60s, like towers, brutal place. But so we move in there, we're splitting the rent, and I mean, we really, you know, have no money. And so he's like, "I have a friend that's like thinking about coming down now." And he's like, "You know, hey, what, would you mind if I like stay with you guys? I said, Eric, like we can cut the rent now again if he like sleeps on our couch. So, you know, had that happen. So we
any
we
idea actually, what the, any memory what the rent was?
You know, it wasn't like cheap, because again, Fairfax is kind of an expensive place, but it might have been like a 2-bedroom that might have been like $1,000 or something like that, $800-900. And so we were just trying to find every way we could to just slice it. We eventually also had somebody live in our dining room, another guy, friend of ours. So we utilities. You know, like friends of mine from Massachusetts that you know, they were in and out. I wouldn't say they were there forever. But, you know, I think Eric's a smart guy. He's economical. He understood, you know, the finances of it, how we could cut the cost tremendously. And, you know, after a year he was gone, as he had gotten engaged, kind of almost like when we got there. So it was only a year deal, but it was, we had a lot of laughs. Yeah, we had a lot of laughs.
So you get there, and what was it like? What is Jim Larranaga like to a guy who he kind of recruited to coach, but you're making nothing?
Yeah.
And every one of these guys is, and look, Larranaga been doing a long time, but it was, you know, pretty Final Four Larranaga, you know, everybody evolves a little bit. What was it like?
Yeah. I mean, for me, he reminded me the other day, he said, hey, you remember the first thing I told you? I said, yeah, you called me and said, hey, look, you don't delegate to me. I delegate to you. He says, you know, I said, hey, coach, can we do this? Can you help me with this? And he says, hey, Chris, I delegate to you. You don't delegate to me. Okay. And, but, well, it was just an incredible experience to be around. The staff was incredible. We had obviously coach, who's the best, Bill Courtney, who was actually, you know, was with us here at Miami this past couple of years, but had been the head coach of Cornell. Mike Gillian, who had been the head coach of Longwood, who's at IMG now. And then obviously Eric, who had been at Tennessee and kind of gotten exposed to the high level and for a few years as a GA. So for me, a guy who, you know, I think had a lot of passion for it, there was so much I could pick up and learn from those guys. And I always joke that coach never gave me anything that was like super important.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you didn't trust me, you know, but what he did was, I crafted my own job a little bit back then. The rules were a little bit different. So I helped Eric do everything he was doing, you know, film exchange, video stuff, all that. But then also like back then I was the director of underclassmen recruiting. So it was, you know, they were working on the guys that were trying to get in that class. And I was working a list of younger guys. And as you know, the DMV's got so many good players. So at that time, you know, a lot of the guys that I started with on that first year of kind of like, I was allowed to talk to their high school coaches, things like that. They turned out to be a couple of the guys on our Final Four team. I was also back then, if you remember, Doug, we could work camps. They kind of had changed that rule back. So like I would be working Eastern Invitational for Rob Kennedy. I've done that as a college player, but now I'm doing it as a George Mason staffer. And a lot of the guys we were recruiting, a lot of the high school and AU coaches that we were, you know, in our area, they were working the camp or kids were playing in the camp. So I'd gotten a lot of exposure to the area doing that. And then you just learned that, you know, you think you know a lot as a player, and then you get and you see inside what guys are doing. You're like, geez, I didn't know anything. You know, so I learned a lot.
That was 02, 03, right?
02, 03, yeah.
So that's John Larranaga's senior year. What was the interaction like between coach and player, dad and son? That's unique as well.
Yeah, it was great because coach had heard, you know, Jay had played for him as well at Bowling Green. So I think they had gotten the drill down. We had just an okay year. We had a bunch of injuries. And John wound up like playing the point. He was like a point forward. He had a very good year. We had, and you know, given the injuries, we had a good year, not a great year. But you certainly, they were pros at it. You know what I mean? Like, because he had done it with Jay and he'd kind of learned that part of it. And John was older in his fifth year. He had redshirted the first year. So it was, you know, it was really, to be honest, it was pretty impressive how they interacted because, they kind of knew the drill, you know, of how to approach it, you know, on the court, in the office, in the locker room. it was player coach. And then you certainly, because I was around, you know, them, and outside of that, you'd see, you know, the father son piece as well. So, that, you know, professional is what I would say. Really well done.
The program, and it's interesting because the program that you guys left is very different than the program that you arrived in, that you arrived in, right? In 02, yeah. 03.
Well, yeah, they were good. But, yeah.
Yeah. But what in terms of support, yeah, in terms of fanfare, what sure was it like in that year?
Yeah, I think Eric and I, that was around the time Good to Great came out, and Eric and I used to joke, you know, kind of like, haha. Yeah, we took it from good to great when we got there, you know, like it was good and then we got it great. But no, I think that it was, I'll tell you this, Doug, like when you take a job as a young person and you just want to get in, right, you have no idea what you're walking into. Right. As, you know, you just don't know. I mean, just especially as a guy who's playing Division III and like, hey, I want to be in Division I, I'll go anywhere. For me to be as fortunate to go into a program with one, the type of people, but then also that they were winning, that there was some momentum there. Now looking back, you can't even put a price on that, right? Because I was not there to turn it in 99. I was there where the program was in great shape in 2002 and sort of getting ready to go on a little bit of a run again. And then, yeah, obviously we go to the Sweet 16 of the NIT. We lose out at Oregon, which I'm so happy I got to see Mac Court. Did you go out? Did you play out there ever? I'm sure.
I have the greatest Mac Court story ever.
Tell me. Go ahead. Give it to me.
I just told this one in the lobby. I told it to Chris Beard. And who else was I talking to? Rodney Terry. A couple other coaches were around. And this is my story. So in 1997, right? So 25 years ago, I was in my gap year, right? So I went to Notre Dame. I left and I was thinking about transferring. I get in trouble and I have to leave. But instead of transferring right away, which I could have done, I sat out a year. So I didn't play. I worked out with Golden West, where I went to school. And the head coach is Tom McCluskey. Tom was my high school coach my freshman year. Sure. So I got to practice all year and just be scout team dude, just try and kill dudes. And then coaches who'd come in that were recruiting me, they'd come and watch me work out. And, you know, the Jairus like locked the door and did like a three coaches. I'm going on my visits during the season because, you know, I think I always thought in hindsight, early signing is now it might be different because now they tell high school kids just take whatever because so high school recruiting is so hard. But I feel like so many things change in that one season, right? So many things like
sure, you sign, sure.
Because I remember I signed at Notre Dame, but I basically committed in October and then you sign November. Right. And then they start playing all season. Everything changes.
Yeah.
I mean, now even more so. So I go on my visits. So I visit Oklahoma State on a Wednesday, and then I'm visiting Oregon on a Thursday. And my Oklahoma State visit gets kind of wonky because of travel. So I wasn't there very long. And well, there's nothing special about the visit, to be honest. So I land in Eugene, and I go to Mac Court, and my dad in the mid 80s had been a volunteer assistant after he got fired at Long Beach State at Oregon State. And he always told me about Mac Court. And he was like, it's the only place I've ever been that during the game, it shakes, right?
No question.
The baskets shake because, and it was, of course, he's at Oregon State. So it's the biggest rival. So I go there, they're playing Arizona, and this is the year that Arizona won it. And Arizona's one of the best players, Miles Simon. We've been boyhood friends. We played together since fourth. So the staff was, and it's interesting that you had a couple internships in the world of Wall Street because Tad Boyle was on the staff and he had worked in business, right? And Mark Turgeon, another assistant on staff, was his dear friend from Kansas, and he had gotten him to be a coach. And then Darren Kalish was the other assistant.
Right.
And Darren had coached against me when he coached for Team Avia. So I know all these guys, and they're like, man, you're going to love it. Okay, Jerry Green's the coach. Jerry's a North Carolina guy.
Yeah.
So that means the point guard calls the offenses, calls the defenses, subs himself in and out of the game. And I'm like, bet.
Sounds good.
Right? So here's what you're going to do. You're going to sit right behind because, and at that time when you went, they had renovated it so that there were chairs on the lower level, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So where the players sat, where the players sat in 97, they're playing Arizona and they beat Arizona. The players sat on benches in the front row with a little pad. And then they had me sit literally with my knees behind the player. So I'm not up in a, you know, like sometimes you put a couple pretty girls around a guy, you know, or you put an advisor or somebody around, or their parents are with them or whatever. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is amazing. I'm basically like part of the team. Here's the problem though. Not sure you want a guy down kind of mid bench when Jerry Green is wheeling guys in and out. Cause Jerry's like, he's subbing like crazy. He's that Carolina deal. So every time he subs a guy out, they're all motherfucking him. They're like, this fucking guy, why'd he take me out? He doesn't know what he's doing. We're going to win in spite of him. Like, guys just talk shit, you know? And I mean, I love Kenya Wilkins was their point guard, and he was right. He told no lies. Guy took himself in and out of game. Guy called the offense. Listen to me. They win the game. The students carry Jerry Green off the court. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, this place is amazing. But they hate the coach. And they didn't hate him. It's just the snapshot of
sometimes guys, you got to be careful, right? Yeah. I mean, like,
guys bitching on the bench, right? Yeah. Because the guys bitching on the bench are bitching because they're on the bench for no other reason.
Right.
But it was a real kind of weird sort of a little bit of a turnoff, even though I was turned completely on to the program, the coaches, and everything else. That's an incredible.
The place was unbelievable, right?
I mean, yes. top five environments in the sport, and kind of a cathedral that unfortunately it built. I know a little bit too much about that place. It's actually all wood. I was like, why don't you guys just do that?
Yeah.
They're like, no, it's all wood. It's basically a fire hazard.
I believe it.
You know, it's Oregon. We just, when they built it, they went out and they got trees from Oregon. It's all wood. You can't.
Is it still there?
It's still there. It's still very much there. But they don't play basketball games there. And instead now they have this bright, shiny new place that nobody really likes. And it's an amazing, the new Matt Court is the new one, right? Matthew Knight Arena, whatever, is an awesome place, but it just does not have the personality of Matt Court.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Anyway, okay. So you guys go to the NIT.
So yeah, so we go to NIT. Yeah, so that was you know, a great year. I think we won the most games in school history that year. And then the next year, we got a young group that, you know, has a lot of now familiar names, but we were like a nondescript team, typical of a young team. We were talented offensively. We could score. We're not a great defensive team. And then we come into 2005, 2006.
Okay, so let's. This is my favorite thing. This is my favorite thing with Final Four teams, is this kind of magical how it all comes together with the roster, right? Sure. Like I love to tell people, it's like the like our roster was when we went to the Elite Eight was unique, and then I always love Coach Sutton's last Final Four team in 04. Was like, I mean, it just was meant to be. Like Joey and Stevie Graham basically showed up with Ted Owens in the summer. They were doing like a tour trying to see these two kids from Central Florida transferring in. Like, could we find them both a scholarship, right? And John Lucas only gets there because of what happened at Baylor.
That's right. Yeah.
And there's two other point guards they were supposed to get. They didn't get, and they took John Lucas late. Like, things come together. So. Help me with how that team kind of came together. Okay. So let's start with Jai Lewis.
Okay? Yeah.
Classic, undersized, load. He's like 6'6", 270, right? Something like that.
Yeah. That would be on one of his light days. Yeah. Yeah. But that
now,
time.
I'm trying to think, 06 was his senior year. So year was when you were there.
Yeah, I forgot exactly how this happened. It was his freshman year was my senior year in college.
Okay.
And then I kind of became the guy that chased him around. He's a great guy. I mean, he's awesome. He works with kids.
Was the diet thing?
No. It was like, you know, Jai was like, hey, go get Jai at the dorms, get him on the golf cart, bring him over here. He doesn't want to go, you know, that type of stuff at that time, you know.
You had a golf cart. That's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Coach loved the golf cart. Yeah, Jai said at the we did like a black tie thing for the Final Four that year. And he said, hey, I want to thank Caputo. And like, you know, if he didn't have any hair before me, so don't blame me for the lost hair, you know, like that type of thing. So. But no, he had gone to Maine Central, played, not for Max. Cause I think he played for the next guy, Mark. And then, was from Aberdeen Proving Grounds, which was up north of Baltimore. He's a military family and there's a base up there north near where Cal Ripken's from. And, so he was, like on the all rookie team. And then, you know, the one thing I would tell you, Doug, you appreciate this is anytime somebody had like a undersized load like that, they would say, well, I got the next Jai Lewis. And we would say to them, like, guy, like, you got to understand, this guy's had like a 7'4" some crazy wingspan. He was incredibly quick. He was an all-state lacrosse player. He had hops. He had handles. Like, there's videos of this guy doing things that guys that are 6'6" or 6'5", 290 pounds, like, cannot do. You know, sometimes people would say, like, some great athlete is a freak. Like, Jai Lewis was a freak.
No, I get it. I totally get it. Okay. Tony Skin. Now, Tony, obviously.
Yeah.
Tony's become a major player as an assistant coach in college, right?
Yep. Yep.
And I want to get to the Tony Skin incident, which I remember, and I'm sure you remember, but let's not give it away just yet.
No.
And Tony Skin's there when you get there. What was he like?
He was great. Bill and Eric had gone up to see him at junior college. Tony went to Blinn Junior College in Texas. I think got homesick halfway to semester.
Cam Newton school.
Yeah. Went, I think halfway through semester, was like an honest guy and told the coach, hey, look, like, I'm kind of homesick. I think I'm going to go back to junior college in Maryland. And the guy basically didn't play him then after that. Like, you're quitting. So he didn't play. I don't think he had like stats or anything. So he goes to Hagerstown Community College. He was friends with Jason Mascheri, a guy who was a really good player at George Mason on the 99 NCAA tournament team. And Bill and Eric went up there and saw him and, you know, kind of you watched him, and he was really good. And he came up to them and said, look, like, not only will I come to George Mason, but I'll sit out here. So I have 3 years. And that was like, wow, that's unbelievable. Sidebar to that, we're recruiting Bashir Mason, who's the coach at Wagner now, who's done an unbelievable job, who was a hell of a player at Drexel, tough dude. Mike Gilley and I go to pick up Bashir Mason in Newark from St. Benedict's, and we're driving him to George Mason for the official visit. And as we get to the office, Tony's coming out of Coach L's office having committed. So it was like Bashir's visit. And again, Bashir might have chose Drexel no matter what, but the visit was over like the minute we got there because Tony decided he was coming. So it was, and they battled those guys. I think they both knew it, and they battled each other for years, you know.
Lamar Butler.
Just the ultimate, you know, PG County. You know, everybody talks about how good PG County was. He played at Oxon Hill High School. He's probably, you know, just a DC guy, great shooter, great family, great personality. He was like Mr. George Mason. He should be like the mascot there during his time. He was all over the place, you know, in the media as well.
Will Thomas.
Just an NBA player that happened to be 6'6" and not like 6'10". If he was 6'10", he'd been in the NBA for, you know, 15 years. He still plays in the EuroLeague. He's played at Mount St. Joe's High School for Pat Clatchy, great program in Baltimore. I think you remember his claim to fame was they beat Rudy Gay like 7 times in his career. They battled, they were rivals, and Will's team always won. He was just an incredible competitor, is to this day, still playing.
One more, Florian Campbell.
Yeah, Florian Campbell was, you know, it was funny. We were talking about this the other day. He was the one guy that might've been like a little bit more recruited. Those guys were all recruited at the, you know, mid to high mid major level. But Follerin was a guy like Georgetown was recruiting hard, and they took somebody else. But Doug, you remember there was the 5-8 rule? You could only sign 5 in 1 year and 8 in 2 years. I think it was eight and 2, and you can only do 5 in 1. And I think for us, like, other than Georgetown, who decided on someone else, I think a couple of the other schools in the area where Fowler was would have been recruited and would have stayed close, that rule came into play. Back then, I mean, guys, remember, we used to be asking all the time, like, hey, how many did Virginia sign last year?
Yeah.
Because they couldn't do it. Yeah.
It is interesting that these kind of one-off, two-off rules that, you know, I remember.
Right.
Here's one. I was very close to transferring to Utah. At that same year I was talking about before.
Right.
And people forget not only Prop 48, but in 96, right at the very start of 97, they passed a rule that if you're a Prop 48 and you graduated on time, you get that year back. Andre Miller was a Prop 48. So I was going to go to Utah, and it was like 2 days before my visit to Utah. And Rick called me because Rick's thing was like, hey, I'd come and play with, be in the backcourt with Andre for a year, and then I'd take over for 2 years.
Right.
And then he called me and said, you know, there's a new old rule. you know, look, I want you, but, you know, it'll be you and Andre for 2 years. Because I was like, well, is he staying? He's like, yeah, he's going to stay. So, yeah, so you get that year back. And that, I think Ivan McFarland at Oklahoma State, that was a big reason that he played in that final 4 year. Anyway, so yeah, there's those weird one-off rules. Okay.
And, by the way, it's going on now with the, you know, COVID year and all that.
Yeah.
Got us to the Elite Eight. COVID year got us to the Elite Eight. Right.
You have doctors and guys that can get lost. Okay. So that year, okay, there's a lot that people remember about that year. Yeah. My memory is a little different. I remember you guys were really good. There's like an 8-game winning streak there in the CAA. I remember the CAA was really, really competitive.
Really good.
Yeah. But what was it like in 06 in terms of the tournament? Like, did you guys think, hey, we can be it at large? Because I just don't remember
the
CAA really being a conference that produced multiple NCAA tournament teams until, right? But so this is like my third year at ESPN and we're covering stuff. And I remember like the names of CAA teams coming up. So what was it like in the moment?
Well, yeah, I think we had been the first at large bid in like 20 years or something, you know, there. And there was no, our RPI was good. Obviously we go out to Wichita State back in the Bracket Buster days and win at Wichita State with Turge and Tad were there. And
that Bracket Buster,
that was a hell of a win, you know? Yeah. And if you remember back then, Doug, I think like the Valley was getting
multiple teams in,
five teams, like some crazy number, you know?
Yeah.
And so for us to go into like late February, we knew we were obviously having a great conference season, but for us to go late February into Wichita State, who was in first place and the hardest place to play in the Valley and go beat them, you start to feel like a little bit like we should be in, right? Like no matter what, we should be in. But there was no history to say that that would happen. And then obviously we lose to Hofstra.
Okay. So, but you had that year, you guys in Hofstra, they were wars,
yes. Right?
They were wars. And what I remember is not only did you lose to Hofstra twice in the last 10 days of the season, right? You lost to them in the regular season and then you lost in the semifinals.
Yes.
But then Tony did a nut shot. He did a nut shot.
He's a little frustrated. Yeah, he was a little frustrated. He hit Lauren Stokes. Ironically, I think they wound up playing on the same NBA Summer League team. Like,
yes,
two years later, and Tony's like, you know, geez, I can't get away from Lauren, and they were laughing about it, you know. But
so you lose in the semis, and you're like,
I got a good story.
Did you know that?
I got a good coaching story, right?
Go.
So I'm miserable. We go back to the hotel room. We're in Richmond. Probably my least favorite arena is the Richmond Coliseum, where the damn tournament was all the time there. And it was like a VCU home game every time we played them there. But James Johnson, who's now at NC State, was the head coach of Virginia Tech, was on staff at the time. We're roommates. And, you know, we're both just like, I cannot believe this. Like, not only did we lose and we're not probably going to be in the tournament, but they'll look at us as a team that shouldn't be in the tournament because Tony's not going to play because he's going to be suspended. So that was the thought. So,
you know, which is what we all thought.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
I'm young at the time and I'm like, I don't know. Like, how do you not factor that in that if not their best guard isn't going to play in the first round, you know? Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. So we drive back to, Fairfax. I definitely slept in the office that night. I was just miserable. I didn't want to go home. I just fell asleep on a couch. I woke up, I went recruiting in New England. I'm getting out of here and, went recruiting for a day or two. I get back and, James was recruiting a guy who wound up coming. It was a very good player for us, Andre Smith, who was from Houston, Dre Smith, but he was at Cochise. You may know Jerry Carrillo. Cochise, a great junior college coach in Arizona. He was playing for Jerry. And they were in their regional finals or whatever. And James got sick. He got like, I don't know, the flu, whatever, something where he was like, dude, I cannot go to Arizona. I'll go. I want to be around here. This is crazy, right?
So it's like a funeral. It's a funeral, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Right. I'll leave the funeral. Yeah, exactly. I'll leave the funeral. I'll get out. So again, I'm literally home like a couple of hours and I'm like volunteering to jump on the Southwest flight to Tucson. Now, little do I know, you know, like Cochise is not in Tucson. It's like now 2 hours in the desert on the Mexican border. And I get there and, you know, Dana Altman's there. They're recruiting him. A couple other, Brian Fish from Creighton. It was kind of like us in Creighton, I think. There might have been one or two more, Mississippi State. So I basically spent like 3 or 4 days in Arizona watching those guys and just trying to get my mind away from it. And then I fly back on Selection Sunday in the morning. My wife, then girlfriend, we're talking on the phone and she's looking on the computer, bracketology, and we're not in, you know? And then I call somebody else and, you know, was talking about, yeah, I just looked at bracketology this morning, you're not in. And then I'm like, you know, going to the, I don't know, I guess to get a cab or pick up my car at the lot, drive it back because I'm going to go to Coach L's house for this miserable Selection Sunday event. And my wife, Julie, calls me and says, hey, I just refreshed this. Lenardi's got you in. And I'm like, Lenardi doesn't have us in. You're looking at something. Maybe it didn't update. Maybe you're looking at something for like a week ago. We just said this. We're not in. And she says, no, I'm telling you, it says like the timestamp of like 2 minutes ago. You're in. So I'm like, Julie,
I don't know if he got a call. He might have had a mole.
So I called somebody else. I think Dan Steinberg from the Washington Post, who's our beat writer. I'm like, Dan, can you just pull this up? I looked at this like a half hour ago. We were out. Are we in now? And he's like, pulls it up. He goes, dude, you're in. So now I go from being like Mr. Miserable, stoic, how am I going to deal with this? I show up at the house like, we're in. And people are looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, no, I'm just telling you, we're in. We're good. There's no reason for him to change that at the 11th hour like that.
Right.
And then obviously, we get in, and the most relieved person in the building was Tony Skin, because certainly he was feeling the weight of the world on him. You know.
But then you won without him. How'd you win without him?
We won without him. Gabe Norwood played great. You know, he really played great in that game. You know, we had a little bit of history at Michigan State. We had played them 2 years earlier, no, a year earlier in D.C. They had gone to the Final Four, but we had a pretty good game, 66-60. And we had a little bit of confidence there. Some of their better players from that team were gone, a little bit younger. So we pulled it off. And then we played Carolina in the next one. 2 years before that, that Tony Lamar Jai's group, you know, I guess it was their sophomore year. They were, we were up at half at Carolina, and a big, it was like 49-47. Like we just no defense. Everyone was getting buckets, but there was a little bit of confidence there. Like, hey, we played against those guys. Cause that was Felton May McCants. They had won the national championship the next year. Those guys were gone. It was Hansborough and Danny Green and guys. So great players, but our guys had felt like a little bit of confidence hadn't taken a lead there 2 years earlier. So,
this is always a fun one. When you, if you remember back to the bracket, did you honestly like think like, okay, we're going to beat them. We're going to beat them. We're going to beat them. We're going to the Final Four.
I thought familiarity with those teams in the first two games, you know, was a good thing. Doesn't mean you're going to win. I was probably too naive and young. I kind of thought like, hey, it's better to play somebody you're familiar with. But then when you win the second game and you have Wichita State, I think this has been talked about, you know, there was certainly a confidence that, hey, we won at Wichita State, which we know how good they are. We know how hard it is to win there. Now they're coming to DC. Like, yeah, this is going to be a tall task for them. And I think the players would tell you, if you talk to them, that they could, we could sense it. Like when we'd see those guys like in the hallway and all stuff, like,
yeah,
it was almost like, I think they were almost deflated about being in the Sweet 16 because they were playing us, who was sort of the darling of the tournament in
right.
some ways.
Right. And whereas they otherwise in any other setting, they would have been the darling of the tournament.
Correct.
How did Coach L handle it? Because as we both know, getting to a Sweet 16 now is like, even in 06, it's like getting to a Final Four. And you guys beat Michigan State and Carolina, yeah. right? And then you come home, and then you're home for a couple of days before you go, and you're in D.C. So what was, and he's like, you know, he's the best, but how did he handle it so that there was still the ability to focus on the task?
Yeah. Yeah. He was unbelievable with it. I think it's funny. Like, one, he had coached in two Final Fours at Virginia. So he had at least that experience of what it was like, you know, and I think it's so funny. Nobody knew who George Mason was. And his thing was like, hey, this is my chance and our chance to show everybody like what our school's about. So he, in some ways, he didn't insulate these guys. It was like very inclusive. Like, we're opening the gates to, you know, this is our chance for our university to be, you know, a little bit more recognizable. And so he was great about that. I think the guys, I mean, there was no chance of them not being somewhat distracted. They're all home. They're all from here. Like, I think Tony told the story that they snuck out of the hotel to get haircuts like one night, you know, because it was like their barber. Like, oh, I'll just go to my barber. So no, it was, I think, again, going back to familiarity, the fact that we had played those guys 2 weeks earlier probably helped in all of that.
So then you play UConn, and UConn yeah. was loaded, right?
Really, really good.
Loaded. But now you kind of got to return to that. I mean, I think the jerseys kind of helped you, right? They're like green jerseys, and you know, like, they walk in there, UConn. Like, they both maybe both the jerseys may be made by Nike, but they are completely different factories, right? And when you guys warmed up, you don't look like much. Do you think the kind of the layup, you know, the old layup line win, where somebody's looking down at you like, we got these
guys.
Do you think that played at least a factor in your?
They didn't know what league we were in. I think that was one of the big ones. Like, somebody asked Josh Boone, they thought, said we were in the Patriot League. And I remember, like, out of that, like, a couple of reporters were running out of the media. Like it was like they got the best story of the, you know, of the day. Like, can you believe that they didn't know what league they were in? They thought they were in the Patriot League, like, running to go write it, you know? So yeah, there was a little bit of that. And you know, they played Brandon Roy in Washington in the game before.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there, I mean, we all know how good Brandon Roy was. Like, I'm like sitting there scouting the game, thinking to myself, are we sure we don't want to play UConn instead of Washington? Because this guy, Brandon Roy, is ridiculous. I mean, it was a overtime game, and it was, I mean, he was terrific. So it was, both those teams were really
good. Did you have the George Mason, or did you have, did you have UConn, or did you have Washington?
Yeah. I did both back, you know, we still kind of do it this way. Like, I did all the opponent scouts, and then the other guys self scouted offense, defense. So yeah, I had both. And it was,
explain that to me.
Yeah, it's different. So for 10 years, and now DJ Irving did it for us this year at Miami, did a fabulous job. One assistant coach would do every opponent scout. You know, it would almost be like an advanced scout sort of situation. And then, like, one coach is sort of focused on the defense, our defense, our offense. And obviously, when we all come together, the scouts present it, but then everybody's sort of talking about game planning. So it's, and you know, Doug, in this day and age, there's a lot more help today than there was, you know?
So three people work on each scout?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's that. It's like, my focus is on the defense, our defense. So I'm thinking about how we're going to defend these guys. Somebody else's focus is on the offense, how we're going to score on them. The other coach is really focused on the opponent. And this is what these are the tendencies. This is the actions. These are the calls. And then we sort of all come together to build the game plan. It's for consistency of messaging. So, like, yeah, sometimes, you know, you'd have guys like use different terminology. Maybe guys are better at this or that. And so coach feels like if one guy's presenting the opponent and it's the same every time, the consistency is good.
When did you know you had him?
Never. When the guy missed the shot at the end, you know, Denham Brown. No, I mean, we knew we were, I think at halftime they were up, I believe. but we hadn't played particularly well, and we were close enough within 10, I think. And then we jumped out, I believe, in the start of the second half and kind of got it either tied or got a little lead. And you know, felt like, hey, we're in a real battle. Jai and Will could score on their big guys one-on-one. Calhoun never double teamed. So that was like, okay, we got a way to play for the rest of the game offensively. And we were a good defensive team.
What is Coach L like from this perspective? There are the old coach was always like, we do what we do, and that's what we do, right? And they adjust to us. Some of these guys are more pragmatists. I feel like Bill Self, you know, like I'm watching the Final Four, and they double ball screens for the first, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. It really rattled Villanova because that's not they had switched all year. They hadn't double ball screens. Yeah. And now they post to post doubled early in the game as well. Was he did he adjust to your scouting report, or did he was there certain things that he always did? Because I felt like Calhoun, like, look, I think Calhoun's an incredible coach, and he did sometimes adjust, but there's a lot of times he's like, hey, we'll do what we do. We're good enough. It doesn't matter. What was Coach L like?
No, very adaptive. Yeah, very adaptive. Played a lot of different ways throughout his career. That season, I think you may know this, you know, we lose to Creighton by 20 at home, and we came back and changed. We went from denying up the line, on the line, to being more in the paint, more packed in, gaps, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. He moved Tony off the ball.
Right.
And put Fowler on the ball. And, you know, like the rest is history, but it took a lot to make that change midseason. And I remember him saying, you know, he's unbelievable about having these discussions. But in that particular case, he said, hey, I'm coming in. I don't want anybody's input on this. I've already made this decision. I've thought long and hard about it. I don't want you guys to talk me out of this. So we're doing this, you know? So, and that was, I think the first game we played after that was at Georgia State, who had just come into the league and had, I want to say they beat Delaware by 30. And it was like, damn, like they're new in the league. These guys are good. We go there and win by 30. And it was like, okay, that was a great coach.
So now, and I want to, and you don't have to promise me a part two, but I want to do a part two. But
yeah, no, I'd love, yeah, sure.
In your mind as a head coach, how do you want to be, right? And we're all going to be different when you're faced with some of these dilemmas. Because, look, there are some coaches that will sit there and go like, look, you got to have these core things that you're about. Yeah. So that, and if you change them, you know, the kids think you don't know what the hell you're doing. You're just, you know, they have to have confidence in what you're teaching them initially. And that has to be your core thing. So in terms of like how you, again, this is, you just got the job. This is your first day. How do you think you want to be?
Well, I think there are things, and you know this from, you know, from your career and look, there are things that don't change. Like no one's going to convince me that like not getting back on defense, there's some other way to play, right? Or like guarding the ball hard. You know, I think everyone talks about Virginia's pack defense. What they do unbelievably well, better than anything, is they guard the hell out of the ball, right? Like point of attack, right? Nobody's going to tell me that like, hey, it's not better to take open high expected value shots, you know, but somehow you should do it a different way, right? So like, for me, I think there are things that are not going to change. Everything else is probably up for change. How we get to this point, how we get to that point, you know, yeah, you have to play to your personnel, play to your, you know, your team, your opponents, things like that. But I think the basics of it is, you know, keeping it simple in that sense, I think is that can't change it. And you got to eliminate losing, right, before you can get to winning. So again, what style you play? Well, I can tell you this, whatever style you play, if you turn the ball over a lot, that's a bad style of play. You have to change that.
Well, know? it's also the, everybody wants to play fast, but you kind of have to have good players to play fast, right? Well,
we always got this is the one that was funny. We never talked about tempo. We never talked about pace. We talked about pace and how we ran offense, you know, how we moved. But like this past year, number one points per possession team in the country in transition. And yet, like, we never like practiced that. It's just, hey, we got good defensively. We were able to steal the ball a lot. Well, guess what happens? You throw it to a guy who's not being defended. He lays it in. The points per possession goes up incredibly, right? There's no drill that, like, you know what I'm saying? So, like,
good coaching,
you know, yeah. Or, like, you know, you have good offensive players, five guys, like, around double figures. If you get stopped, I love that one. Well, you know, offense is more important than defense. Well, again, I've never seen an offense that's better when you take it out. Offense is always better when you get it off the backboard.
Yes.
Or you steal the ball or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, which one's more important? I think what I've learned is balance is important. It's the ultimate game in that sense, right? The ultimate team game. You got to play both sides of the ball. So,
okay. What do you remember about the Final Four?
Oh, just, I remember thinking, man, I got here at 25 as an assistant coach. Am I ever going to get back? Is this it? Is there anywhere to go
about
from
it,
here?
You thought about that at the time?
Yeah, I'm like,
because I think some people think, like, you know, it's 25. You've been there 3-4 years. It's kind of easy. Like,
I didn't think that. Cake. I thought, like, this is impossible. And I was thinking that this year when we're up 6.5 on Kansas, like, man, like, this is nearly impossible. And it's 15, 16 years later. How lucky would I be, you know?
I thought you guys were the second best team in that Final Four.
I think so. I think you're right. I think we played the best team, and I think we might have been the second best team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the feeling like in the locker room when me got beat?
Yeah.
I mean,
actually played the best game that they had in those two.
They played in the two Final Fours. Yes. That's
probably the best, the closest game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons that I wanted to work for CBS was I felt like the story wasn't properly told.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's a TV thing where we have a tendency, we focus on Cinderella and they lose and then we don't focus that we don't pretend about it anymore. And I would have sat there and I remember saying all the rest of the Final Four, like, hey, you know, George Mason's the second best team in that tournament. But what do you like those moments when the run is over is an emotional one. Do you remember what that locker room was like, what coach was like?
Yeah, I think they were sad. I think coach was great. I mean, I think as sad as they were, everybody knew that they had done something that was, you know, really impactful, not just for them and George Mason but really I thought in college basketball at the time, because you know, VCU, Butler, Wichita State, Loyola, I might be missing somebody that followed us. I think somebody said, you know, those guys walked into that locker room thinking it was possible. Where for us, like, good. I was like That's thinking, good. Like, we could be Kent State. Like, this is awesome. We're Kent State. We made the Elite Eight. Is this incredible? Yeah. You know, in modern basketball, right? It happened in 79 or whatever with Penn. But, like, for those next teams that came through, they went in there thinking, like, hey, if George Mason
can we could be George Mason.
Yeah.
Where were you when you got the call that you got the job?
I was in Miami. I didn't go. I decided not to go to New Orleans because I thought maybe something was going to happen. And was
did somebody tip you off? Did you know? You know, did coach say you got this thing?
No. Yeah. I mean, I had the sense that maybe it was going to come that day, and that he was doing a little soul searching about. You know, my time at Miami and the new opportunity, and I certainly wouldn't have been able to function in New Orleans.
Are you driving?
I was driving. Tanya Vogel, our AD, called, I was driving, kind of pulled over, stepped out of the car to talk. and it was obviously exciting.
What is that like when you hang up the phone? Obviously you're going to call your wife, right?
Yeah, of course. Yep. Wife was with me actually.
Oh, shoot.
So that was good.
She was with you?
I think I gave the thumbs up. Like, she was looking at me with a call of concern, you know, face of concern. I just gave the thumbs up. Yeah.
So what'd you tell her? What was the?
Well, we've been talking a lot about it. So it was, for me, I'm such a creature of habit. Like, what's been incredible is not only to go to a place that you have some familiarity with, having been up here, but just a location. That I'm, you know, we have so many friends here. I was there 9 years. I when I left George Mason, I said, I'll never be anywhere this long in coaching. Like, this is crazy, 9 years. And then I've been in Miami 11 years and now back to DC. So it's, we're fortunate in that sense. Like, I got a lot of things on my plate, but like, I don't really need a GPS, which is good.
At what point in time did you allow yourself or you allow her to look at real estate?
Oh man, I don't want to do any of that ever. You know, it's like coaching. It's like coaching. You're like, no, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves, or whatever. But I'm pretty sure my wife was on, you know, looking at real estate quite a bit. But again, the good thing is when you know the locations, like you kind of know, oh, we're going to either live here, here, or here, or, you know. So that part, Miami.
Okay,
was much
so I get cheated on that one. Okay, so I get one more.
Yeah,
your
sure.
Day
sure.
Today. Today is your first day. Today is your first day. Give me what, honestly, what does your day like? Are you hiring a staff today? Are you meet and greet today? What do you have?
Meet and greet, you know, probably paperwork, meet and greet, all compliance, all that stuff. And then we're going to get on the court with the guys, you know, which is the thing I'm most looking forward to. All the other stuff I have absolutely no desire to do, paperwork and things like that. You know, I'm like, if I could just be in the gym and somebody else could do the paperwork, that would be great. But I don't think that's going to happen. But it'll be great to meet a lot of people. And there's actually a number of people that work with us at George Mason that actually work in the athletic department. So it'd be some familiarity there. But hiring a staff is not easy. Obviously, recruiting now in the days of the portal, who you can keep, how many, you know, who you're going to get, who you can keep, all that stuff is, like as you said, it keeps you up at night.
All right, so give me a time sometime later this week, because I do want to get to the
Miami stuff,
Miami, all that other stuff. Tell me.
Yeah, I'll shoot you. Yeah, I'll shoot you one and let you know.
And,
it'll be awesome.
And I really appreciate it. Congratulations.
No, Doug,
by the way,
brother.
Dude, DC is the best. Go have fun.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So, all right, man. Appreciate
Thank
it, brother.
Thank you again.
Thanks.
Appreciate
we'll
it.
See you.
All right, that's it for Chris. He was awesome. My picks, I think Kansas wins. I don't think Carolina's healthy with Baycott. I think they got to have some they got to lack some gas in the tank. And I feel like Kansas is playing their best ball. It doesn't mean they're going to hit as many shots as they hit the other night. That's why I like the under, the game under. I like halftime. Kansas game, 4 points, Kansas. I do think it's a close game until late. Kansas pulls away. Man, we have so many good guests coming up. Some people have reached out and love the podcast. All of you that we ran into in New Orleans that love All Ball, I appreciate you. I will take your suggestions. We will continue to evolve this show, continue to evolve the guests and the style with which we do it. In the meantime, remember my picks. And if I'm wrong, of course, you can tweet me and say that I'm an idiot because I picked the wrong team to win a basketball game. That's generally the way it works. In the meantime, I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen.
It's up, it's up.
And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.